I said, what you know about it?
It's the stew, baby.
Got the mise en place.
Yummy stew, baby.
And the room a lot.
Hello, hello. You're listening to The Stew. My name is Jason Stewart, and this is my food podcast. As always, say hello, Chris Chang.
Hi.
Hi.
Our beloved co-host here. We have one guest today who is a chef here in Los Angeles named Josh Pressman. Say hello.
Hi.
Josh is, you've been cooking around town for how long?
Not very long. Actually, almost 1 year, to be exact, professionally.
What do you mean?
I know, it sounds weird.
Professionally?
Professionally, it's a weird term. It's a quotation.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I've been cooking for a long time at home, which is okay. Sort of, I guess, the start of the story, which is mm-hmm. that I didn't want to join a professional kitchen for the longest
Same.
Time.
Same. Okay, well, we're going to get into this.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm going through the same thing right now.
I can understand that. I've heard stories through the grapevine about you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I think we maybe are of the same cloth.
Okay, what stories have you heard?
Well, that you spent some time at Forage.
Yeah.
And that it sort of seemed like, to me, maybe that was you're reluctant to do it, but you sort of have to, and you're telling, you know, it's that back and forth.
I wasn't, well, yeah, there's a restaurant here called Forage, and I befriended the chef there, who's a good friend of ours named Kat, and she was nice enough to take me under the wing and kind of show me the ropes of a professional kitchen and let me work on the line for a bunch of services. And I also worked a little bit at another restaurant that my brother used to manage. It's like it doesn't have a name on Fairfax across from Animal.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's the Escuela guy, I think. Or I thought it was.
I don't know.
I thought he used to cook at Escuela, but
maybe that's drawing back. It might be. That was, I worked there first, mm-hmm. and that was kind of the, we're gonna put you through the ringer. The chef guy there, super nice guy, and I get along with him very well, but he was kind of like, he didn't know anything about me, whereas Kat knew a lot about me, and like we like followed each other on Instagram, and she saw me cooking food, and she knew that I knew some stuff.
Right.
But this guy, he was just like, oh, you want to cook? You don't want to fucking work in the kitchen, bro. Oh, and he like kind of, he put me through the ringer,
right.
As if I was like an 18-year-old kid who, you know, just walked in off the street and said, I want an internship. Where do I start? Square one.
Salad dressings, go.
Yeah.
No. Not even that. Like,
really?
Like.
Isn't it before eggs you do salad dressings?
I spent a week picking cilantro leaves off the stems.
Absolutely.
How'd you do? Not that well, apparently, because you're on a podcast.
I mean, I did as well as you could. I mean, it's just, you know, like, you go through that laborious, mind-numbing labor of, like, hey, you're going to be here for 6 hours, and you're going to, here's a case of cilantro, take all the leaves off the stems, and then when you're done, come find me.
You made me do that with parsley once.
And I'll have you. I did. But, you know, that was kind of the thing, and then, like, I would try to talk to him and be like, hey, I know how to do other stuff. Can I, like, maybe do other stuff? And he'd be like, all right, now you can
peel garlic.
Wash chickens.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Or, you know, like, here's a case of chickens. Break them down.
Yeah.
And that wasn't that bad. You get to at least use a knife. But Kat at Forage was nice enough to help. She would just be like, here's the menu. I'll show you how to cook everything once and just go for it.
So that was more of, like, a mentorship situation.
That was more of a mentorship. She totally just let me go for it, and I would work full service.
Go Forage
on the grill. I went Go Forage, and I learned how to do stuff. I wasn't as fast as everybody else, but I felt like if I worked there for a few months and got it down, I could get into the flow. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, as long, you know, anybody.
Best and worst experiences. Mm. I remember you hurt your wrist.
You hurt your wrist?
Yeah, because he doesn't know how to whisk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well. the very first time I do know how to whisk. But the very first thing I worked with her was a private offsite gig, mm-hmm. where it was like an art show that they were kind of catering, and there was an outdoor kitchen set up. It was in Santa Monica. It was kind of cold, and I was like in a parking lot with a tent over me, and I was making.
You didn't stretch your forearms.
I was making vinaigrettes, and it was kind of like, you know, make enough lemon, ginger, or lemon garlic vinaigrette for however many hundreds of people.
Right.
Here's a giant bowl. Here's a whisk that's 2 feet long. Here's how to make it. And it's just kind of cold. And then I'm just whisking and whisking and whisking. And then, you know, I feel like I did some like weird muscle
pulled something.
Like one of my tendons, like kind of like moved over the other one and got like inflamed and all that stuff. You know, it's all part of being in the kitchen, Chad.
How old are you now? That's what it's a part of.
You know, it was a good learning experience. And then when I did my pop-up, she was nice enough to come help out. And when it turned from a fun pop-up to not fun anymore, getting slammed, you know, 300 people came to it.
Yeah, I was there.
It was a nightmare. So it was a full.
Cat was star player that day.
You were?
Cat.
Oh, Cat was. Yes, yes.
Why would I say that?
No, I'm
modest.
Yeah, like about half an hour into it, I had stayed up the whole night before prepping, no sleep, just one full night of prep. Full night of prep, you know, and like not realizing. You know, I thought I had it all worked out, and I explained to everyone how each dish was going to get made, and everything was fine until we got hit with 100 people in line waiting to get food, and then Kat was just like, all right, I'm taking over now, and she had the presence of mind and the experience to be like...
In charge, sort of.
Yeah, and she just delegated everyone to do their things. Mm. She took over on the hard stuff and worked it all out, and we sort of made it through.
I was there for a while. It was great.
Why didn't you help? Do you not like us?
I had to go to work, so
everybody was there for a long while it took a long time for the food
I was on
to come
eggs
out.
You were on egg station.
And swearing a lot.
Cracking eggs or cooking eggs?
Cracking eggs and swear words.
A lot of my dishes were much more easy to execute in a home kitchen.
Time. Right.
Cooking for your girlfriend on a Saturday brunch instead of, you know, all the dishes had to be compromised and simplified. And
sure.
Everything that I wanted to do had to be rushed out.
That's sort of the shitty thing that you concede when you join a professional kitchen. It's that, the recipes, like cooking at home and cooking in a professional kitchen is very different.
Mm-hmm.
They're two different worlds.
Yeah, I learned that one the hard way. So, but I also learned, like, you know, so many things in one day of service. Like, you have to just as much make food that you think is good as much as you're making food that can be quickly executed.
Right.
And some of that, and the real rub is, can you do both of those well?
Yeah, and sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can't. What you have in your head is not possible.
Yeah,
it's just frustrating.
Well,
so what do you sacrifice first? Would you rather take an hour to get some guy like the best possible version of something, or do you take the 5 minutes to give him, like, you know, 60-70%er?
Right. Well, I guess it depends how good your 60 or 70%er is, but also like what kind of establishment do you want to run?
Yeah, it really depends on the place. If you're if you're at a restaurant where you expect to do a 3-hour
tasting,
like
turkey
tasting,
sandwiches,
yeah,
70% and 100% is going to be pretty close.
70% is 100% turkey sandwich.
Shots fired. Big Turkey, if you're listening, Josh Pressman over here.
Did you say Big Turkey?
Yeah, Big Turkey.
We don't want to get those guys breathing down our necks.
No, those guys. Well, ringing down our necks.
Let's kind of briskly walk through your professional cooking career then.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, since it's brief anyways.
I didn't know it was a year. Well, I just assumed it was longer.
Yeah.
Because of your quality of product.
Thank you. I don't know.
Yeah, for listeners at home, that's the noise Jason's face makes underneath Josh.
When I compliment somebody?
And I'm particularly bad at taking compliments, as I've learned over this last
year.
Yeah,
it was from a man to a man. I'm not trying to blow smoke up a lady's ass.
Josh, you're beautiful.
Like
you're welcome. Mm-hmm. Jason, meh.
I don't have to say these nice things. All right, so yeah, go for it.
It's a weird story. I've always been around food. I was working in the front of house for 5 or 6 years, doing different things, waiting tables, running food, expediting. And
is that here in L.A.?
Yeah.
What restaurants?
Started at Rivera in downtown with John Sedler as the chef. It's on Flower across the street from the Staples Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of fine dining Latino cuisine.
Mm-hmm. Fine dining?
Yeah.
Fine dining.
Fine dining established.
It's
it was a good learning experience. It got me excited about working in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led to me expediting more, which is a middle of the house position, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of... You're a liaison between the front and the back.
Yep. That's what my girlfriend did at our pop up.
Yeah, that's a tremendous role because it's a lot of responsibility. Yeah.
You have to be very organized. If you take joy in Excel spreadsheets, you might be good at expediting.
You might be. But it got me more curious about food. I guess I was more interested in what was going on in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And so then
smelling the smells.
Yeah, smelling the smells, wondering.
Seeing the fire.
Wondering why people are doing things with.
Hearing the Spanish.
Product. Yeah, mostly the Spanish. Big connection with the dishwashers.
Yeah, good.
Which is important.
Absolutely.
You gotta take care of your dishwashers.
Mm-hmm.
The
backbone of the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I did that for a while, and then I started cooking at home. It was sort of a natural thing. I just started messing around with food. It grew from my curiosity, and mm-hmm. I did that for a while, and I was taking pictures of it, and I was posting it on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what I'm talking
just
about.
Kidding.
Welcome
to my horrible life.
I know.
Wait. Pictures of food?
Pictures of
on
food.
The internet?
On the internet. They exist.
You guys are clowns.
Interesting.
Sometimes I find myself on Instagram and like in line for coffee in the morning, and I realize that my whole feed, if someone's peering over my shoulder, is just a bunch of food porn. And I feel for just a fleeting moment, like the biggest fucking dork ever.
It could be a lot worse.
Yeah, it could
I've
be a lot
a,
worse.
I've got a bunch of like Eastern Bloc girls. So I mean,
it could
I gotta,
be a lot of.
I have to like hide in a corner
yeah,
when I'm looking at my feed.
It could be a lot of Eastern European girls doing squats.
I think the obsessiveness, either way, you know, whether you're a perv or you're like this, you're
or whether you're me, Josh, you perv,
whether you're a horrible Korean pervert,
yeah, Josh,
or you're into food,
you're the one who said you're hiding in the corner,
whatever.
But yeah,
so when you're in line for coffee, enough about me.
Yeah. Too much food on the internet, but
it's okay because you're not fat and like slovenly looking.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure because I'll get to something a little bit later. But it's like this reluctance to join the kitchen thing. I didn't want to share these pictures on the internet. I was private on Instagram and I was taking photos of my food that I was cooking, and it was just for my friends and people who knew me, and I was just sharing it with them.
Yeah, see what I'm up to.
Yeah, and then my girlfriend and my friends convinced me to go public on Instagram, which is a weird thing to say.
It must have been big for you.
It was big. It was a big day.
coming out of the closet.
Two years to this day.
Yeah.
But I did that, and it opened some doors in a weird way.
It's not a weird way.
Well, I mean, it's just like
it's the internet, man.
Yeah, it's the internet, and sometimes when you put something out on the internet, it legitimizes like whatever it is that you're doing, which is an interesting. That's why the internet is really cool.
Yes.
Also, it's very scary, I think. I mean, whatever.
It can totally open doors. If you're making a specific thing, be it food, or you are making cabinets or shoes or flower arrangements.
Right.
You put it on the internet, enough people see it, you start, you know, the phone starts ringing.
Absolutely.
That's how the game works.
But it didn't really work that way. It just sort of garnered more attention, and
right.
And it then I was following a chef that I really admired on the internet. He had just moved to LA and started at a restaurant that was in Santa Monica called Rusty Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
He posted a picture of some sort of like lolcat meme thing with looking for cooks over the front of it. So I emailed him out of the blue.
Really?
And that's how I got a job at Rusty Canyon under Jeremy Fox.
No shit.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
Hear that, kids?
Well,
Stay on the internet.
Quit school. For a long time.
Steal your grandmother's clothes.
So, for those who don't know, Rustic Canyon is in the last year or two has become a very popular foodie destination in LA because
Josh Pressman.
Because Josh Pressman's peeling garlic in the back.
Because they acquired this chef, and right. he kind of took over the whole menu and flipped it around and started doing lots of exciting new things and got a lot of press, and people started talking about it and going there, and now it's definitely a food mainstay. And I went there a few months ago and, you know, had some very interesting dishes, shit that I've never tasted in my life, and it was very awesome.
Yeah, it
takes a lot to get me out to Santa Monica.
Yeah, it's way out there.
It was free.
If I was drowning on Santa Monica, would you come out to Santa Monica? Drowning on the beach.
Of course I would. Okay. Of course I would.
I don't know. I have to gauge it.
It depends on the what time of day it is with traffic and everything. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah, like what if I'm dead by the time you get there?
If you're drowning at a...
like 2 p.m., I'm done for.
10 in the morning on a Thursday. 10 in the morning on a Thursday.
That's a tough one.
No, everyone's at work by then. Come on. You don't love me?
It's sort of brutal.
You never know. I mean, yeah, he knows more than anyone.
It's pretty bad.
So you
this
went.
This will be my last podcast for the listeners at home.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone's afraid of you.
Josh, some more about you and Rusty Canyon.
No one's afraid of you. You don't go to the beach enough for everyone to be worried about you drowning.
I go to the beach.
you're a real surf rat, aren't you?
Yes.
So you emailed him and you're like, hey, me want cook. And he said, come in.
Yeah, I was like, here, I cook food at home. Mm-hmm. And this is,
you may have seen me on Instagram.
I mean, I try my best not to come across as that. But he had, as it turned out, recognized me from Instagram, which wouldn't have happened if I hadn't gone public.
Absolutely.
But also, I think he was, well, he had me come in. I interviewed. We talked about food for a tiny bit, and he explained to me the situation in the kitchen and wanted to bring me on so long as I could handle a station.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had no prior experience doing so. So
you're like, what the fuck is a station?
Yeah, what's a station? What do I do? I shaved radishes for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The first baby radishes.
Like a mandolin?
No. I'm talking about shaving the hairs off of the radishes.
Yes.
We had a dish coming off of one of our stations that had just a pile of radishes and some sort of like seaweed aioli, and we had to shave all the hairs off of.
So you
radishes.
You would serve the radishes with a little bit of the stem on.
Right.
So when you do that, you have to
only like one perfect leaf.
Yes.
Or two.
Okay.
You would prune all the nasty ones off.
So the little area where the stem meets the radish or the carrot or whatever other root-ish vegetable can get a little brown and kind of dirty and nasty. So you go in with clean a paring knife,
yeah,
and kind of quick, clean it up.
Yeah, you'll start at this is bad.
That's a good intro job to. Your ass will learn how to shave a radish real quick.
Oh man, I shaved a lot of things in my first year.
Same.
My first year at a professional kitchen.
Yeah. Hairy guy.
Hairy guy. Yeah,
sounds like a rad dish anyways.
Oh god.
I never knew you could shave so many things actually. including citrus, which is a scary thing.
When you're working at Rustic Canyon, which has a lot of fresh vegetables from the farmer's market, and you're kind of serving them in the rustic form,
right?
Your ass is going to get the shaving.
Oh yeah.
Well, what do you mean shaving citrus?
So you peel all of the rind off of any piece of citrus, and it's covered in pith. You can actually take a, and this is one of Jeremy Fox's favorite tools, a bird's beak, which is a type of paring knife that's curled. Maybe you've seen it.
Yes.
And you can take that and very lightly shave all the pith off of each segment.
Oh no!
And yeah, so with clementines or tangerines or a certain citruses that you know you would want to serve as little segments, not sort of supremed, which is to cut the fruit out of the whole thing.
Put them into the little segments,
right?
French, like not supreme.
Yes,
supreme.
Supreme. My French is actually really bad, but if you wanted to do that, you would have to shave all the pith off that way.
So you would take the rind off of a tangerine.
Yeah, tangerine. You take all the segments
and all the little white bits.
You go in with a
knife.
Yep.
I'm explaining it for our listeners who may not know. China.
The white part is the pith.
Great. So you'll go in with a knife and get all of that little pith off to the point where it's an immaculate piece of fruit.
You no longer see white pith residue.
Damn. Those are the things that you have to do to separate yourself from the Mimi cafes of the world.
So you're saying that you take a clementine and then you pith it off?
You pith it off.
God.
And seven pieces of pithless orange segments or whatever will be in a salad.
Aren't I great?
You're great.
Wait, seven pieces?
Of segments.
Meaning
like
that's
salad.
How many pieces are in...
In a salad, so...
In your specific salad.
Yeah, so you maybe have to, your mise for the night on a busy night would be like, 60, 75 pieces of orange, maybe 100.
Wait, so citrus fruits aren't symmetrical? We have seven segments?
No, seven per salad.
Oh, okay. You know, to give you some indication as to like how much man hour is in one single mixed salad with fruit in it.
Woo.
Yeah.
Well, working at Rustic Canyon, how many dishes are on the menu that you have had a influence in? Or I don't know if you've had a full dish that you've created.
Yeah.
Square one, zero to 100, soup to nuts.
There wasn't. I mean, there have been some collabos.
Thank you for putting it in streetwear terms that I can understand.
Jason looked really thrilled when you said that.
Yeah, I think I used that properly.
Well done.
There have been a couple collabs.
I'm listening.
But
Pressman X Fox. That would be the streetwear.
Pressman X Fox, # Pressman X Fox. Mm-hmm. But never my own dishes necessarily entirely.
Okay, which collabo with Fox has garnered the most excitement or buzz or feedback?
The thing is in his kitchen it's always a collaborative effort, which is not like to cop out and just say some contrived thing because a dish is always evolving. You're always trying to make it the best that it possibly
can. It better.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
But we did have a salad at one point in time, a long time ago, maybe 7 or 8 months ago, and it was his pickled smelts which are little baby fish, pickled like Jew style with lots of dill and caraway and God knows what else. Yeah, Jewish stuff.
He's Jewish. He can say
I'm
that.
Jewish. I can say true. That.
We cannot.
And some orange and
I like
and
how you're referring
greens.
To the salad as if it's very commonplace. Like it's a standard salad.
It was
just some pickled smelt.
It was the furthest thing from standard.
Okay, so pickled smelt.
Yeah, pickled smelt.
So whole little and, baby fish
yep,
that
and,
are pickled
and shaved carrots.
Jewish style with
yeah,
dill.
Yeah, Jewish style with like yeah with dill and like a rye vinaigrette. Sort of situation.
Getting Jewer by
yeah,
the
it's just Jewy.
Okay.
The whole thing's Jewy.
Okay.
So that I mean that was on for literally.
Okay. What else is in the salad though?
So orange, chrysanthemum, which is you
super
know
Jewy.
Super not Jewy, but it worked. It sort of tasted like carrots, and it had shaved carrots in it, and it was a nice plate of food. It had a carrot crumble. We dehydrated some carrot pulp.
Sick.
Yeah, it's that was like that's a technique that he uses
that's
all the time.
That's good.
Dehydrators.
So like yeah. You guys do a lot of fresh. Flavors, so like I'm sure you have a juicer out and you're juicing vegetables all the time for things.
One of our mainstays is a beet and berry salad, and we juice beets all the time and dehydrate the beet pulp.
So that's very smart of you to be like, what do we do with all the pulp?
Well, it's smart. Yeah, I mean, it's
there
smart
isn't
of
really,
him.
There other than compost, there isn't really shit you can do with the pulp.
No,
my hippie intern when he lived at a co-op in college.
Can't wait to see what happens.
Said,
with this.
He said they would juice, and then because they're hippies, they're dirty yeah. hippies who drink juice.
Yeah.
And then they would.
You got a fucking cold press every
would,
day, you little bitch.
Whatever. And then they would make like pancakes with the pulp.
Oh.
Like put it in batter and then just fry it up.
So, like
that, I'm sure that's great.
Vegetable
like,
pulp.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Like carrot and stuff.
Like carrot pulp and beet pulp. Pancakes.
Yeah, with like simple like flour.
That's good because I've heard that question be asked before to knowledgeable, credible people. Like I juice all the time. I have all this pulp. What do I do with it? And everyone seems to have the answer of just like
all it took was a hippie
compost.
Right.
I don't know. Like you can't do shit with it. Mixing in with pancake batter and making a healthy pancake is a pretty dope idea.
That's bringing it, you know, seed the stock.
You're welcome, Mr. Fox.
Seed the stock.
Yeah, you can take that one if you want for a little rustic brunch.
So with what you were saying about how, you know, a dish is always evolving at like, you know, a finer restaurant, like if I go to Chipotle, like the chicken burrito is not going to get any better.
Probably not.
But if I go to Rustic Canyon, would you say it's better to go at the start of a season when, you know, or like, you know, like let's say I go when asparagus is, you know, at its prime stage.
Right.
But this dish with asparagus that you've just
that's a great
sort
question.
Of invented. So is it better to go when the asparagus is better or at the tail end when you think you've perfected the dish but the asparagus
Whoa.
Maybe is
Yeah,
better.
That's
some
tough.
Deep shit, dog.
At Neg Dance.
So the asparagus comes in. We're just getting the first asparagus of the season.
Yeah, and you're like, this is where we could start using this.
Yeah.
That's when the asparagus is very tight and new and exciting. But then 3 months from then, asparagus is going down.
It's going to be a little less
But the
flavorful.
Dish that you've been cooking asparagus with, you've been doing it for 3 months and you have perfected it.
Right.
Do I come back next year?
Damn.
Well, and then next year you run that recipe and you already have it locked in.
Right. That's, but is it better good. To go at the beginning of the asparagus
yeah.
season or the 3 months later when you've got the dish
down?
Answer, Josh.
Sorry. Oh, jeez. I think it doesn't matter that much, honestly. It's not what you want to hear.
Although it is a great question, I'm sure it differs from dish to dish. I'm sure,
sure.
You nail something the first time. I'm sure.
I think with tomatoes and certain things, like you're talking about beginning and end of seasons, like and strawberries, certain things that are like really.
Like you can tell.
Yeah, really volatile little things. You could tell. You know, like end of the season tomatoes are still great, but they're not in their prime.
Sweet, they're kind of.
Yeah, they're getting a little mealy and towards the watery side. So I mean,
getting a little mealy.
So it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter that much.
Well, earlier today, I asked some on Twitter some food questions, and I got a if you have, if listeners at home have a question they'd like to be answered, and I've got a couple.
This is fun. Wait, okay, let's do I answer and then Josh gives a real answer. All right, go.
All right, first question from RJ. You two will work with food. What is the best way to steam food without a conventional steamer?
You put it in a microwave, and then you pour water all over it.
Oh, jeez.
And then you set it and forget it.
There you go.
Set Josh, your turn. It.
Next question.
Really killing it, too.
Easy as that, set it and forget it. I'd say set it and forget it, but put it in an inch worth of water in a pot and cover it. You're going to be steaming it.
Okay.
Same thing.
So
even if
you
it's steam,
just put a little bit of water in there. A
little bit of water.
Do you keep it moving so it doesn't scorch the bottom?
Ideally, but at the same time,
like
you want it to be like, you know, medium heat. You don't want it to be scorching.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's gonna steam.
Low heat. Put a finger of water in there.
Yeah, make sure it's steaming and cover it, and you're gonna steam your vegetables.
Okay, that's good. Fuck you, steamer.
Yeah.
Well, you
a microwave.
Microwave.
Or a microwave filled with water.
All right, next question. Andy Cheem would like to know if you guys have a top-notch vegetarian main for Christmas. What do you got, Chang?
I'd say veggie lasagna. Lasagna is a very traditional Italian Christmas thing.
Is it?
Yeah, or maybe it's...
I thought they have the Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Seven Fishes?
Yeah.
That's what it's called.
The Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Dude, you guys aren't Italian. How do you know? Well, maybe it's an Italian-American thing.
It could be an Italian-American
thing.
The same
with that corned beef is nothing to do with Ireland.
I'm sure lasagna is a special occasion meal.
Like a winter root vegetable lasagna.
That sounds pretty good,
yeah.
Actually.
So a winter root vegetable lasagna. That's a good. That's good. It's unctuous.
I'm wet.
Satisfying.
Ooh, nice.
Just make sure those winter veggies are roasted thoroughly before, so they're not getting all
releasing
wet.
All the water. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cook them beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you put it in the microwave and then you pour water all over it.
Yeah.
Here we go.
All right, Josh.
Joshua.
Let it real, man. Lay down the window.
I would say this, and this is going to get weird because it's got to be vegetarian, but I want like some sort of really hearty veggie stew situation, like a la gumbo, like some sort of Creole, like deep south, spicy, like, again, roasted, like... autumn, fall vegetables, winter vegetables, but like in a stew situation.
So a gumbo-esque stew?
Yeah, why not?
Some rice?
Yeah.
Some Cajun flavors?
I could get down with some
Maybe
Cajun
throw
flavors.
Some tofu dogs in there
tofu
instead,
dogs
of, instead of sausage?
Tofu soy riso? Soy riso.
Some soy, yeah, soy oh, riso, yeah. I would say has
tofu dewy?
Has the
yeah, a thing?
Get a,
no.
Get a tofu dewy. A tofu and dewy.
Tofu and dewy sounds awesome.
And like some kind of vegetable protein shrimp product.
Yeah. Well, my chef did something interesting with sunchokes and I think carrots. He made a sort of a merguez sausage with them. He ground them. I think
ground
after they were
sunchokes.
Yeah, after they had been roasted, ground sunchokes and carrots. And added a spice mixture that was, you know, merguez-y, sort of Middle Eastern-y.
Okay.
And he treated it as though it was a sausage patty, and he gave it a quick sear on either sides, and it was delicious.
That's
what
great.
What was the binder?
That's a good question. I think we used eggs, so it's vegetarian.
It's not vegan.
It's not vegan. Yeah.
Yeah, but there are lots of vegan binders out there that you can work with?
Yeah, I'd imagine. I'm not sure what they are.
Keepers are vegan binders. No dead animal products.
No, trapper keepers might keepers. Not be vegan, to be honest.
I'm not sure about that.
Final question. What's the best way to make mashed potatoes? It seems easy, but sometimes you overthink it, says Beetle. It's Beetle.
It's Beetle.
At It's Beetle.
My favorite way to make mashed potatoes is roasting the mashed potatoes instead of boiling them.
Hmm.
you end up getting the same mash, but you have a little bit of an underlying roasty, toasty flavor, especially if you use the skins and use a ricer.
Yeah.
So roast them, you know, bake them in the oven for an hour, roast them up, rice them, a little cream, a little butter, salt, pepper, mash them up, and they'll be delicious.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with Jason. I've adopted that since he showed me that.
The ricer method?
No, the roasting versus boiling, because I feel like, you know, you lose everything. You can always salt later.
Right.
Excuse me, listeners at home, I had a beer burp. I I'm not going to take credit for this. I stole this from Heston Blumenthal, as I do a lot of things. He's the man.
Yeah.
But you heat up the cream or milk or whatever the, you know, sort of wet liquid's going to be, and you put the skins in there because apparently that's where most of the potato flavor is.
Right.
As is most things. Like, tomatoes.
That's really fancy.
Like tomatoes, he saves the vine, and he's like, you know, when you smell tomatoes, you're smelling the vine.
Right.
So, you know, skins or like the branches that things are from is sort of where all the aromas come from.
Sure.
So he takes the skins, but he, you know, he boils them really gently, but it's a starch thing for him. And
so you kind of steep the cream and butter in potato skins.
Exactly. But he uses really small waxy potatoes. I forgot. I don't know the American equivalent, but I think they were called... No, they weren't Maris Pipers. I think Maris Pipers are russets, basically.
Uh-huh.
But he uses really small starchy potatoes, and he starts them in cold water, and he slowly brings them up to a boil. And he does, you know, an hour or whatever, which is ridiculous. He does that.
Some crazy Michelin star chef.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then in the cream, he does skins. And then I've also done like rosemary, garlic, whatever else, smash up and just put in there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then he'll do ricer and then force it through a sieve, which is, you know, French restaurant.
Yeah.
And then he'll do 30, sometimes 50% cream in butter to potatoes.
Yeah.
But then he also does this ridiculous last step, which is he makes these little like lime cubes with like lime juice, some of the rind and agar.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, it's too rich, so you got to cut it through with something acidic. Like, why don't you just cut back on the acid or cream?
So wait, or on the cream, like, I mean. Little gelées or something.
Yeah, little cubes of lime in his mash.
A lime burst on the mashed potato. That's un-American.
That's ridiculous. So sometimes I'll just put a little lime juice or, like, you know, I'll grate some zest into the milk.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, just, you can't taste it. It's just, you won't feel like, oh, I had all this butter.
So, like adding a dash of cayenne, you don't get any of the heat, but it just kind of balances it all out.
Yeah, you're, you know, a little, like, white wine vinegar or rice wine vinegar. Like, sometimes you just throw it in just so you don't.
You can brighten things up a little bit.
Also,
or,
when
like, in pasta sauce, you put in a little bit of baking soda just so you. Just, you can't taste it, but it helps you not get like acid reflux, you know?
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. But that's, I should tell my brother that.
But I've only done that.
You always get an acid reflux.
I only do that.
That's a Jew thing.
Like, for me, I don't have the time to rice and then force it through a sieve, so.
No.
Sending
it through a ricer is.
It's enough.
That's enough. Yeah.
So I'll roast it. The sieve is when you're doing super fine.
Yeah.
Right. I like it a little more rustic. So, yeah. Maybe roast it.
But then I'll still steep shit in the milk. Like, that's something I've, like...
That's cool.
...fully taken on.
Huh.
And also, when you're roasting the potatoes, put a... If you like garlic, put a head of garlic wrapped in foil, a little olive oil, salt, and pepper. Put it in the oven while you're doing the potatoes, and then squeeze out those garlic nubs.
Ooh.
And then mash those up as well.
So a little garlic oil juice situation.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, you know, when you roast the garlic for a long time, the flavor becomes pretty subtle. Mm-hmm. But it's you know, potatoes and garlic go together very well, obviously.
Side note on that, I had really good garlic olive oil mashed potatoes years ago at ABC Kitchen in New York.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, I think Deepak Chopra runs it or owns it or something.
No, no. He maybe owns it. Yeah.
It's weird. Deepak Chopra owns it. And they didn't use any like dairy or butter in it. It was like all olive oil was like that was the fat in there, and then they finished with like incredible olive oil on top, and it's really good.
If he's Indian, he was probably sneaking in some ghee though.
There's definitely some ghee in there.
That's how they do it.
But
okay, Josh, your turn.
Roasting preferred method too, but salt roasting actually.
Oh
yeah, to make it a little
like
fancier.
A crust.
Yeah.
Sam, girl.
Yeah, well, because then you don't have to season. He's got most of the base there.
Wait, do you peel and then cover it?
No. Just cover it.
So
just
much like
a is the skin that porous?
The skin is that porous. Okay. Yeah. You can salt roasting is great for all sorts of rooty vegetables.
Great.
Yeah.
I've never done that before.
Yeah. Then you can proceed to the rice or
so
whatever.
when you do that, do you just lay a sheet pan out with a bunch of salt and you put them on top, or do you have to fully submerge them like a salt baked branzine? Perhaps.
Yeah, I've done it a handful of ways. Because
that's a lot of salt to cover some fucking taters.
So to cut back on the salt, it's a commitment. And let's be honest, like at home, you don't have you don't have pounds of salt.
Yeah, you can't just be like, I'm going to make mashed potatoes, I'm going to go buy $20 worth of sea salt every
time. With a whole box of salt. Like, that's not practical. But there are methods where you sort of make a meringue with salt in it. A salted meringue.
Sick.
And you could cover...
Everything you're telling me tonight is incredible.
I'm glad that I'm blowing your mind with salt meringue. Because it's cool. You cover whatever it is that you're baking in salt. And it forms as a meringue and you crack it.
Oh.
And then unearth whatever is in it.
Meringue isn't like egg whites whipped.
Yeah, whipped. Sick. Whipped.
Interesting.
But you can bake it on top of the salt. I've done it before. It works... I'm not sure about the science behind.
Right. It may not, if it's not fully engulfed.
Might not absorb.
It might not work as well, but I'm sure it'll do something.
Sure, yeah. It's going to be salty.
Have you ever baked in any other, like sugar bake, or is that a thing?
A sugar bake?
A sugar crust.
A sugar crust sounds
or
good.
Anything like that.
I think if you bake sugar, possible? It turns into caramel.
Oh, right. It melts. It's salt has a super high melting point, I guess.
That's why you
can, I don't know if salt can
point.
Melt.
Wait, salt or sugar?
Salt.
Oh, salt. Salt's not gonna melt.
No, but that's because it has a way higher melting point.
I mean, sugar. if you pour it in a volcano, it'll probably melt. But I've never seen salt melting.
Well, not in a baking capacity, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Are there
any
other
salt comes from the goddamn
crystalline
volcano,
spices or anything that you can bake in like that?
To my knowledge. Well, there's lots of baking in things. There's clay baking.
Right.
There you can bake in ash.
Clay bacon.
Okay, I've seen that.
Yeah.
American Idol, great guy.
Yeah, I mean, like.
Sorry, that was my Chris Chang joke.
No, because I didn't say that. I wouldn't say that.
It was close.
Moving right along.
Yeah.
So I've seen ash. I've seen clay.
Ash and
that's
clay.
Cool.
Yeah. Those
clay bacon, like the American Idol guy.
All right, so
there we go.
Here's this idea. People will have different kinds of salts, like a smoked salt or other types of infused salts. I've never infused a salt, but if you make a salt infusion with something that pairs well with a potato, maybe like a chive or something like that.
Sure, yeah.
Can you make a chive salt, like a sour cream and onion vibe?
Oh, that sounds really good. I don't see why not.
How do you make a, because like there's smoked salts and other types of things.
How do you infuse a salt?
Maybe you can make chive smoke. Smoke that salt with chives.
Well, you
why don't you just, when you're like smoking the salt, just have a bunch of chives sitting in there.
I think you could burn a bunch of chives.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, chive ash.
Chive ash.
You mix that with the salt.
Chive ash, that's the guy who owns ABC Kitchen?
Stop. Chive ash. The guy who's sneaking in the ghee.
They're always sneaking in the ghee. Yeah. People think that ghee is vegan. I learned that one the hard way at a Krishna temple.
It's definitely clarified.
It's true.
Animal product.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a vegan Krishna temple in Laguna Beach that I used to go to when I was vegan.
For food?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like when we were vegan, like all my friends were vegan, and we would go because they would have this Krishna temple free vegan dinner. But in order to get the free dinner, you have to sit through like the Krishna spiel for 45 minutes or whatever. And then we would eat all
worth it. Eat popcorn.
Well, it doesn't sound as bad as mass.
When you're broke, you'll watch some Krishnas for half an hour to get a free meal. But like we would eat all the food and be like, this is really... This doesn't taste like all the other vegan food. Like,
it's actually good.
And there's just ghee in everything.
Yeah.
Those sons of bitches.
Well, I mean,
They must know that ghee comes from a cow.
I think that their definition
of
vegan
is different.
That
to be, they don't consider that to be an animal product. It's like a sacred ingredient. You've separated the
animal fat,
the milk oil. Fat from the whatever blah blah blahs, and it's like a sustainable oil product, even though it comes from a.
Oh, and the milk's coming out anyway.
Yeah,
it's not like you're. Well, maybe sometimes you're forcing it, but but the milk's there.
We've all squeezed a teat before.
That's utterly ridiculous.
Speaking of Krishnas,
Merry Krishna.
I'm going to do a religious segue. You are a Jewish person.
I'm a Jew.
And we celebrated Hanukkah day one yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not Jewish. I said we. But
well, it's the royal we.
Yeah. We're all members of the tribe. Not
there
you,
we go.
Not you, Chris.
I'm chosen.
I'm chosen. What does somebody like you of an elevated culinary stance do for a Jewish Hanukkah holiday season?
I'm such a bad Jew that I work for the season. Yeah.
I actually
roll on Shabbos.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm working all the time.
Right.
All
so
the time.
You
especially at the end of the year.
Right.
It gets crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, like I'm not observing, but maybe I'm eating especially as we
I'm not asking so much in terms of what are you doing religiously or spiritually, but I'm
food-wise. Yeah,
like
food-wise.
How are you turning up the latkes, the briskets, the whatever, the what have yous?
Yeah, I mean I'm eating sluttier food. It's not necessarily like I'm making latkes, but maybe everything's cooked in schmaltz.
Mhm.
It is already anyway because I'm working in a Jew's kitchen and we had at one point an entire shelf dedicated to schmaltz.
Wait, can I borrow some? I was like actually trying to make chicken noodle soup, and I didn't have.
No, we were giving quarts of it away.
Fan.
Yeah, schmaltz is delicious.
It might be my favorite fat.
It's the best.
It is, right?
Yeah, it might be my favorite fat as well. I first learned about it.
Like to me, like French fries, like duck fat fries, beef fat fries, it's too much.
Yeah,
but chicken fat fries is.
There was a rotisserie chicken guy who used to be at the Echo Park Farmers Market. Now he's in South Pasadena
with the machine that like throws the birds over the.
Yeah, there's like a rotisserie trailer that he hitches up to the back of his truck, and there's like three or four rows of chickens roasting and spinning, and at the bottom where all the fat collects, he just puts like you know quartered taters down there and lets them sit there. And they just get bathed in the chicken fat. Nothing greater.
That's clucking. Definitely. Delicious sounding.
but at working in a Jewish kitchen, are you doing any forward thinking Jewish dishes?
No. I'm sorry. No.
The answer is no.
No. The answer is no. I'm to be a bad Jew is just, you know, to be a good Jew almost. Like, as a reformed Jew, I'm a reformed Jew.
Okay.
That's the basis for this. I'm not observant, as they would say. I'm not conservative.
Do you eat pork?
I eat pork. I eat shellfish. I eat pork and shellfish together.
Do you eat meat and milk together?
Exo sauce is one of my favorite things in the whole world.
Wait, do you eat cheeseburgers?
I eat cheeseburgers. I don't have separate knives. Or silverware.
Wait, I didn't know that one.
Oh, that's,
tell me that one.
That one's a weird, weirdo Orthodox Jew thing.
What do you do?
You have separate silverware.
For
whatever the hell you're eating. If you're eating fish or you're eating...
Oh, you have your fish set, you have your chicken set.
You've got separate
fish
sets.
Fish set.
Whoa.
Yeah. You're always keeping
Thanks
it.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Did I tell you... Sorry, side note. Jason, Josh just met me, but did I ever tell you the one time that I... met these Orthodox Jewish girls at the 3 o'clubs.
I don't know. Maybe
it wasn't. It's not. It's just a crazy story. But never mind. I'll tell you after.
Now I'm sort of curious. Does it involve schmaltz?
No. No.
Because that could be interesting.
Is schmaltz expensive?
Schmaltz, all sorts of rendered animal fat is if you're buying it commercially,
it's
expensive.
Cheaper than duck fat, though, I'm assuming, right?
It should be cheaper than duck fat.
Mm-hmm.
What's the fattiest part of a chicken?
The fattiest part of the chicken has got to be the skin.
Or like the, like, so if I just went and bought chicken skin.
If you bought chicken skin and cooked it down in some existing oil, uh-huh. you would end up with schmaltzy oil. It wouldn't be pure schmaltz because you wouldn't be cooking it in chicken fat, but.
I've actually been doing that all week.
Cooking down chicken skin?
I made like a Hainan chicken rice.
Oh yeah.
Deal where you like boil chicken with ginger and green onion. And you cook that down and have a bunch of stock from that, but you're left with a chicken that's boiled with, that's covered in skin that's easily removable.
Right.
And I just peeled all of that off, and then I've been using that as my fat for whatever I'm doing.
That's awesome.
For the whole week. So you just put in, you just peel a chunk of fat off of the chicken breast, slap it on the pan, put it on like a low medium.
Oh, yeah.
5 minutes, you know, flip it over halfway. And you have enough fat in there to do whatever you want. You can fry an egg in it. You can, you know, whatever you may want to do.
That seems extra wrong.
So you keep the skins around, and then you use like a piece of skin as like a quarter tablespoon of butter.
Exactly. Okay. And then really? And then the end product is chicken skin crackling that you. Right. That's obviously
that
delicious.
Maybe you incorporate somehow, or you just eat.
Is the purest form of schmaltz then like? Let's say I just put a whole chicken in a pot of boiling water, and then I put it in a refrigerator later, and then just peel that like layer of fat off on top after it's been chilled. Is that just the purest way to get schmaltz?
I think that the purest way is cooking chicken product in chicken product, like fatty chicken product in chicken fat, basically.
Have you ever made chicken confit?
I have made chicken confit.
Like fully, like a chicken cooked in chicken fat.
A whole chicken? Not a whole chicken,
yeah, but like chicken, like the way you would make duck confit.
Absolutely,
chicken,
yeah.
Chicken legs.
All the time for
fully submerged in duck fat.
Oh, yeah.
And well, cooked down.
Yeah, chicken fat in this case, yeah.
So you've done that with a chicken with chicken fat?
I have done that, yeah. For family meal.
How do you get patient zero chicken fat, though?
How do you get patient zero?
Well, you just buy a tub of schmaltz.
Oh, that's how you... But how do they get that, then?
They're cooking it down.
Let the Jews
figure that
out.
They're cooking down the skins. And then it's ordained by a rabbi, and it turns into schmaltz.
Wait, really?
No.
I'm sure the chicken fat is...
Like to get pure chicken
fat. You can get it in all different kinds of ways. You boil the chicken.
Like what I said.
And then you remove the skins. You can cook those down. You have fat rendered. And then the chicken broth that you've made from cooking the chicken whole... Once you put them in the fridge and the fat solidifies, you scrape that off top. That's chicken fat.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of everything.
Okay. Yeah. But if you want to obtain quarts and quarts of schmaltz, like tons of schmaltz, you start with chicken skin. Whoa, yeah. Sick. It's the easiest way.
Have you ever worked with turkey schmaltz?
Turkey schmaltz, never. I have confit turkey legs and chicken fat, which is delicious.
She said this like 12 times. Josh, am I here tonight?
Anything in fat and confit, and then you just pick it back up on a flat top or in a pan and just get it crispy.
I've never confit anything.
Oh man, there's nothing more beautiful.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I've eaten confit things, but as a home cook, it's not the most practical thing to just have a fucking shitload of whatever fat it is.
Not very practical, but you can keep it for a long time.
Yeah, you can keep on feeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one thing I don't like, how do you feel like when people will say confit? Because like confit by definition is something being cooked in its own fat.
Right.
But then there's all these, there's like tomato confit and all this shit.
Right, it's not cooked in the tomatoes.
How do you, that always bugs me.
Right, it bothers me. I think that it just means, confit I guess literally means cooked in its own fat, but mm-hmm. it could be cooked in fat too.
I don't stand for it.
You don't stand for it at all.
I wipe my hands with it. Meh.
Yeah,
so if
well.
I sat in my Toyota Camry on a hot day in June and I needed more Freon... Would I be a Chris Confit?
Yeah, I mean, if there's like a little sesame oil around, maybe just to get it started.
There's schwitz involved for sure.
Schmaltz and schwitz are two different things, although they sound very similar.
Cooking in my own fat in my Toyota Camry.
When are you not cooking in your own fat? You know what
I'm
I mean?
Not that sweaty right now.
I know. Thank God it's getting chilly lately, huh?
It, it is a nice change.
let's talk about pickling.
Pickling stuff.
I know that pickling is very popular nowadays. And
yeah.
You probably are.
All methods of preservation.
You probably are cool with that.
Yeah. I learned a lot of
things. What is you pickling lately?
I just pickled some red currants, which are little tart berries.
Chris has the biggest boner.
Dude,
this whole podcast.
You got a man.
If you want me to, you know, if you want top later.
Thank you.
pickled currants.
Pickled currants. I don't know. I pickled a lot of weird things. Rose hips recently. Lots of strange things that I were hard to sort of come by.
Wait, when you pickle a rose hip, though, is it like
yeah.
in the same way you would pickle a cucumber?
Sure, yeah. Whatever pickling that I learned a lot
like
about.
Red currants are sweet.
Yeah, so you can make they're sweet, they're tart. You could sort of accentuate that with like more or less sugar or like certain types of acid.
More of a bread and butter sitch.
Yeah, more of a bread and butter sitch.
But sorry, can we talk about the Jones on Third Pickles for a while? Those are just awesome.
What are they?
They're just bread and butter, but they're just super sweet. Like the brine's like clear.
Oh yeah,
they're awesome.
I had a problem with bread.
Well,
and
it's just sugar water, basically. They're really crispy and they're just sweet.
They're crispy and sweet, but they're pickles.
Yeah, because they're pickled.
Yeah.
Technically, I guess
they're sweet pickles. Sweet pickles are good for certain things. Yeah. And I went sweeter on the red currants. They ended up being delicious, but. Pickling's really interesting.
What would you do with a pickled currant, perhaps?
I just incorporated it with a fish dish.
Okay.
So tight.
well, explain exactly what a currant is for our listeners at home who might not know.
Okay, a currant is a tart berry. It grows on.
Kind of looks like a craisin, like a little baby craisin.
Sort of like a baby craisin, like a baby blueberry.
Okay.
And if it dried, it would be a craisin.
So a blueberry.
Right. Yeah, a blueberry would be a craisin.
What's the flavor like?
The flavor is just it's tart and sort of I guess. Fresh and tart is the best way to describe it. Like a raspberry.
Like all of Chris's bookmarked websites.
Like my what?
Your bookmarked websites.
Gross.
Or your Instagram feed, whichever it may be.
Crazy and Eastern European.
Okay. So when you pickle them, because mm-hmm. the currant normally, like, when you get it, is it like fresh and whole or is it dried?
It's fresh and whole usually.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
but
when you pickle it, what happens to you?
What? I didn't do anything.
You're just laughing at me.
I'm allowed to laugh.
When you pickle it, it's not
trans- the best medicine.
Does the currant break down like it would a cucumber or pickle?
It doesn't break down as much because you don't want to cook it. In the pickling liquid. Sometimes if you're pickling something and it's sort of tough and it needs to break down, you would actually boil it in the pickling liquid for a little while till it's the desired texture. These are so delicate that you just want to pour the
room temp or the hot.
You can pour it over hot.
Okay.
It's not going to wrinkle them, but it is going to, those things are porous enough to accept some of that. Pickling flavor.
Yeah, is there anything that is sort of not porous enough that if you wanted to pickle it, you'd have to cook it first?
Yeah, just can't pickle it. What's the unpickleable?
The unpickleable. I'm not sure about that.
I don't know. It's just
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's all porous. Yeah.
Yeah, because like a lemon or something like that has a pretty tough skin, and you can pickle the shit out of that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you pickle meat, you pickle all sorts of things.
Preserve it up.
Yeah,
preserve lemon.
Mm-hmm. Preserve lemon's interesting.
Yeah,
it is. I like that.
Salt packed.
I've seen that.
I like I like a dried Persian lemon as well.
Have you ever, dried Persian lemon?
Mm-hmm. Persian limes?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's Persian lemons too.
Yeah,
they got everything in Persia.
Persian lemons are sweet.
Yeah,
it's confusing.
They
I used
are.
To think Meyer lemons were the sweetest lemons. And I took a bite of one, and it's just there's extra juicy.
Extra juicy
but
and
still,
orangey.
Still,
that's what we got right here
still
in front
sour.
Of us,
is this a Meyer? Nice.
It is a Meyer, yeah.
For sweet. Listeners at home, there's a small tub of Meyer lemons in front
Speaking
of us.
Of, yeah, I've found that my neighborhood in L.A., Atwater Village, if you really pay close enough attention, you can do a lot of urban foraging.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a bad, dirty term.
But eyebrows did most of the talking.
I can walk 10 seconds from my door and find a beautiful Meyer lemon tree, and then I could walk 5 minutes and there's a wonderful tangerine cutie tree that's super delicious.
Go back to Portland, you draft dodger.
There's also some horrible wild fennel growing.
Wait, really?
Yeah, there is.
There's
pretty cool. Like, you never see.
That's cool, but you shouldn't really be picking fennel off the side of the road.
Why not?
Yeah, but
you'll find bad results. I've found.
You mean you've like tried? Taste-wise, or like you're gonna end up in the restroom?
No, taste and toughness. Maybe a little restroom as well.
Maybe you just picked it when it was under or overripe.
But here in California, you can if you go on a lot of hikes.
California.
Here in California. Welcome to California. You, like, if you hike, especially...
Chill out!
If you get to the chopper and travel to the west side of California...
This is a Mr. Freeze quote.
You can... I've been on a lot of hikes in, like, Santa Monica, Malibu, whatever. Not to brag, but there's wild fennel...
No one's impressed.
You listening, lady? There's a lot... There's wild fennel everywhere, and that's the kind of shit that you can definitely pick. But I've learned that... Fennel also grows like roadside.
Yeah.
And that can be a little less desirable.
Is it just like a weed at that point?
It's kind of weedy. It's a little more tough. It's a little more dry. And it's kind of absorbing exhaust fumes. And it's just not as great.
It's not the desirable growing environment. Mm-hmm. But I found the same thing actually over the hill in Echo Park, on Echo Park Ave. There's a lot of... that's part of me.
That's my natural segue into how's your urban foraging working out for you, buddy?
Fantastic. It's great over the hill.
So over the hill in Echo Park, which is a neighborhood here in Los Angeles on the east side.
Uh-huh.
What are you pulling on the ground?
Well, we're right behind Dodger Stadium.
What you plucking?
We're plucking
40s.
40s. roaches and LA dogs. We have wood sorrel. Lots of wood sorrel.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. That's a hot ingredient right now.
It is.
That's an exotic thing to have.
It's very Noma-esque. Mm-hmm. And lots of nasturtium, which is another hot one.
I don't really fuck with nasturtium too much.
It's a true weed.
It's a true weed. People love it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it. I don't get the nasturtium, and I don't get... Fuck, what's the other one?
The textural one. We asked Kat and she said it's...
Yeah, what is that one?
Texture.
It's kind of... It's almost a little cacti-ish. It's a little...
It's fuzzy?
No, what is that? Do you remember?
No. If I remember, shit.
I would have said something.
I can't think of it because I'm too drunk.
I'm blanking.
But it was... It's a hot forageable herb. That I can't think of the name of, but it kind of has like a aloe-ish, kind of bitter, cacti feel to it.
It's crunchy, I think.
Crunchy sounds like ice plant to me, which is a weird...
No, it's not an ice plant. If I told you the name of it, you would instantly recognize it as like a...
You know what? I've had it in... I've had it in Korean like all the time.
Yeah.
No, it's
one of those
popular
things like, you know, like... Kale's always sort of been a thing in Italian and like certain Asian cuisines, and then like now that it's hot. But
yeah,
it's like,
I see it like you can. It's like a popular hot item on menus, but I'll see it at the Armenian market for like 8 cents.
Oh, purslane.
Purslane.
Purslane. Purslane. Yeah.
Purslane. Purslane.
Stupid ass purslane. I hate you.
I think it's fine.
I sort of love it. I'm sorry.
I seem to be the only one who doesn't fuck with purslane. I also don't like saying the word out loud.
My
it
mom
doesn't,
like,
it doesn't roll off my tongue.
Well, it's for some it's purslane and for others it's purslane. It's like it's just
so for Jason it's who the F cares.
I don't know the difference between the two pronunciations that you said.
It's purslane or it's purslane. It's slightly different.
Could you say it with an Armenian accent now, please?
Purslane. I can maybe do that.
I'd rather not.
Not without offending a lot of people.
Yeah, I say purslane and nasturtium.
Nasturtium.
Two words I hate saying out loud. get him out of here, yeah. I say.
Well, there's a ton of it in the backyard.
Nasturtium.
You also say turmeric, which bothers me.
Oh,
I say turmeric.
Oh, you do?
Suck you said dick.
No, because once I corrected you and you said, no one says turmeric.
That's wrong, and you
suck
know it.
My turmeric.
Wait, so it's turmeric and turmeric?
No,
or?
Turmeric versus turmeric.
Oh, turmeric.
Yeah, it's saying there's an R in front of the right. U. Tur.
After the U.
After the U. Oh, yeah. Tur. And there's an R before the M,
the
I
other one's
say.
A sort of T-U-M thing.
There's turmeric. It's the natural flow would be to say turmeric, but it's
yeah,
actually
like turmeric's
turmeric.
More of an Ermergard yeah. thing.
It's a little bit of an Ermergard thing.
Yeah, it is.
Moral of the story, fuck you, nasturtium.
Yeah, not the greatest, but a lot of
fuck
it.
Fuck you, purslane.
Isn't nasturtium like flowering?
Yeah, they're...
It is, right?
It's pretty common. It's
a really
kind
beautiful
of has
flower.
Like a minty kind of... medicinal feel to it.
Yeah, like a spicy, herbaceous, minty, sort of weird green thing.
Herbaceous.
Mm-hmm. Herbaceous.
Love that word.
Yeah, and the flower is like bright orange and yellow, and it's nice too.
And you'll make a little gelée out of it.
How many plants do you think, like poisonous plants, like how many people died to find out, like, oh, nasturtium's chill, and then, like, you know, like, poison ivy, we can't because, you know, Jeremy over there is dead.
I don't know if it's the die. You can't really die from eating poison ivy. You just get a rash.
Like,
inside?
Inside?
I don't know. That's a good point.
Huh.
I mean, I'm sure maybe, like...
How many people had to die before they found out?
Well, I think similar question. Things, but about, like, for instance, sea urchin. Like, who was the first person to see a sea urchin and say, like...
I bet you it was like a beaver.
A beaver?
Or like an otter or some
yeah,
kind of...
Yeah, that makes
of,
sense.
Like humans.
But like then, hitting it with a rock
it,
or something.
How does a human find out that there's this delicious little thing tucked away in that spiny fuck?
That's a whole other podcast, Josh.
It is a whole podcast. But it goes back to the how many people died to figure something out thing.
I feel like if you see something that's so well guarded and
right.
dangerous and treacherous,
it must be delicious.
You feel like something delicious is
that's
on the
like
side of that wall.
Forbidden
nature,
fruit, Adam and Eve.
But in nature, it's like the brighter.
That's why I love eating rhinoceros. Same deal.
Delicious.
The brighter the like berry or flower means, the more poison it is usually.
Sometimes.
But also, blacker the berry, sweeter the juice.
Or older the Friday. Chicken, tastier the broth.
Yes.
That's like a weird Mexican saying.
Older the chicken, tastier the broth. I don't think Mexicans say the word tasty.
Well, they don't say tasty.
Más delicioso.
Más delicioso. Or sabor, or some sort of...
Es sabor.
But it is a Mexican saying amongst dishwashers.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen recipes that call for a...
like an old hen.
An old rooster, an old hen, you know? Yeah. Is better.
But it's generally applied to women, I found.
Really?
That's what they're sort of like. They're like, yeah, the older the female, the
this is a food pod, not a misogyny pod. I've heard some,
now we have to have an explicit
no, but I've heard a French chef. Or no, there was, I think it was a French chef at some point that I saw on a television said like, like you know this chicken or this pig or whatever is 4 years old. Usually they go to market at like 7 or 8 months or something,
right?
And so like. The meat's more concentrated and free.
Yeah, I've heard when
heard
you're
that.
Making like a coq au vin, you want to have a more developed bird.
It is.
A cock with wine?
For stewing that hoe?
It is supposed to be tastier that way. The meat is not as edible.
Tastier?
Immediately.
Edible.
Immediately. So like you would have to braise it for a long time.
Oh, it's just tougher.
It's tougher.
Okay. Immediately?
Yeah. Immediately, yes. This is just one punch.
We've had a great podcast today, guys.
It's been okay.
We're going to go ahead and wrap things up. I think this is awesome. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thanks for having
Josh.
Me.
Where can people... I know that you mentioned... People can find your cooking at the restaurant Rustic Canyon in Santa Monica.
I cook for the chef at Rustic Canyon in Santa Monica. His name
Jeremy,
is,
I know you're listening.
Yeah, Chef...
Fox.
Oh, God. Chef
Mr.
Jeremy
Fox.
Fox.
I'm respectful because I was raised better.
Fox and I follow each other on Insta.
Yeah, Fox or Foxy.
Foxy be double tapping.
Yeah, Foxy Brown. Double tap every once
Foxy
in a while.
Foxy Brown double tapping. And where can people find you on Instagram to see all of this crazy food that you're cooking up?
All my crazy food can be found at VicariouslyJosh on Instagram.
Great. Yeah. Chris Chang, where can people find you on the internet at?
At Ellen DeGeneres.
That's pretty easy.
Ellen DeGeneres.
You might recognize me from TV shows such as The Ellen Show.
And that's on Twitter and Instagram?
I think so. Okay, yeah. I have people that do
I'll
that for me, Jason.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at themjeans. And you can go to iTunes where you found this podcast. If you like this show, please give a nice rating and review. That's all we ask.
Five stars.
Five stars if you nasty.
Ooh.
And thank you so much for doing this, Josh. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Josh.
You. See you guys next week.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.